Hello everyone, welcome to Star Screams Ghost, a Transformers podcast, your episode-by-episode podcast guide through the classic Transformers Generation 1 cartoon, the Japanese continuity, and, as you will have seen in our most recent podcast, which is a fine thing to say given it was over a month ago since we published that, the Comics Energon universe, because that is what myself, Jeremy Graves, and my cohort in crime, Mr. Andy Hanley, will be delving into today as we continue our look through the new Transformers Energon universe comic series. Andy, to bring you into the conversation immediately, and I already appreciate I've kind of broken the natural flow of how we normally do the intro to the podcast, how are you doing? And given it's been such a while now, and I know we're going to sort of give a few caveats as to how things may play out in this episode and upcoming ones and such for discussion, but how are you feeling overall about this Energon universe so far?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still enjoying it. You know, it's kind of interesting to see how it's setting out its stall. Like, you know, as you say, one of those caveats is, you know, as we're recording this, issue 3 is out. We have both read it. So, you know, we are a little bit ahead of the game when it comes to this specific podcast. But yeah, like, it definitely feels like it's a series that is going to take its time and not rush into anything, which is an interesting choice and I think quite a fair one. Like, especially given that I do feel like it really wants to try and bring in, it's definitely trying to balance bringing in a new audience and satisfying like the existing kind of Transformers G1 audience. And it's hard to say whether it's succeeding in both of those things, because obviously, you know, you can't Men in Black, you know, neuralize your memory of Transformers to see how it plays out. But like, it feels like it's doing quite a good job of doing things that the long-standing fans are enjoying, but also like, I feel like if you came into this cold, there's enough there to, you know, give you a rope to pull yourself up to be like, okay, yeah, I kind of get what this is all about and why this is interesting.
100% agree. And the way it's already, and again, this is trying not to delve into issue 3 too much, because for context, folks, may as well say it now before I carry on, we are specifically talking about issue 2 of the Energon Universe Transformers comic in this particular podcast. We'll talk about it at the end, but the next one will be delving into issue 3 specifically. So to try and keep things focused on issue 2, I think they're doing a really good job of raising certain stakes with how they escalate certain things happening. Like at the end of issue 1, to sort of, in a way, get onto moving on from issue 1 now, we literally saw Spike and his friend, I think it was Danny, go to work, and then we just see Danny get literally crushed in Starscream's hands. A freaking fantastic ending. And as we get through the story more, we see the escalation of how the humans are going to try and deal with this. And also, as we are, not to jump too far ahead now for issue 3, we kind of see a different side of that as to what that specific ending of issue 1 means in the context of the whole story and character development.
Yeah, and I think the human element is certainly quite notable here, because yeah, Transformers, obviously, they're on Earth, like, humans are always involved, like, even the original G1 Marvel comics, you know, you get Spike and Sparkplug pretty quickly, and they become sort of ensconced in things, and, you know, I think one of the things that the original G1 comic did pretty well was being quite measured in, like, we know you're here for the big robots that transform, and watching them fight. So here is that, but also, like, there is human drama and character drama that we can interweave into it. And again, as we get through, like, this issue and the next, like, there'll definitely be some kind of talk of sort of some very clear, like, homages to the UK comics. But I think one of the things that it takes away from especially the early issues of those comics is that feeling of, like, these are sort of interlopers on Earth, and there is a very real kind of human cost to that. And obviously this, aimed at a more adult audience, can be far more direct about that. You know, Starscream is very much enjoying squishing things, as it turns out. But yeah, like, the kind of the general sort of vibe is the same of just like, you know, this is, the big robots fighting is interesting, but also, like, look at all these other characters and how their lives are being turned upside down by all of this.
Very well said. And with that being said, we'll sort of get onto like housekeeping and stuff at the end of the podcast. So if you want to hear all those details and what the upcoming plans are, folks, There'll be chapter points in the description should you want to flick through when we get on to, say, post-issue trivia notes and whatnot. We'll be going into all of that as well. So feel free to look at the chapter info in the podcast description should you want to jump around. But right now, let's talk about Transformers issue 2, because there is a lot to discuss. And as per how we recapped issue 1, we are going to be taking the synopsis from the TF Wiki. So full credit to them for the synopsis in question and ultimately the trivia notes we will be talking about later on in this podcast. And you were sort of talking about human cost, as it were, a second ago, Andy. I can't remember your exact phrasing, apologies, but I think that's really summed up in the opening almost page of issue 2, because per the TF Wiki, Optimus Prime walks through a wood, marveling at the natural beauty of Earth, the plants, the animals, the scenery. He finds it all breathtaking. However, his serenity is interrupted upon hearing a crunch underneath his foot. He stepped on a small deer, killing it. He leans down, cradling the creature with remorse. And at this point, Spike emerges from the wood and reassures Optimus that this was an accident. And Optimus tells Spike that this world is so fragile compared to his own. And then we'll sort of pause there for a second, Andy. But already, that adds a whole new element. Even comparing to what we've watched, say, in the past when it comes to recapping all of the G1 cartoon. In that it was kind of that unspoken thing of, yeah, you know, the world, to use the Starscream line now, is very squishy, as it were. And it's never really just been outright acknowledged from the Autobots' point of view like that. We've seen the odd extra character die when it came to the Headmasters cartoon that we've recapped all of. But in terms of this feels very, very fresh and just really good, quite frankly, to see that they're establishing from the get-go in issue one with Starscream just crushing that guy in his hands at the end of the issue. And immediately, the next thing we see at the beginning of issue two is Optimus Prime accidentally killing a deer. It's really, really, I can't think of the right word, but I loved how this issue started. Obviously, as horrifying as it is as well, quite frankly, but I really, really like this.
Yeah, I mean, it does a lot of things, really, in a couple of pages. I mean, first up, like, especially when you think back to the end of issue one, this is a really good, like, instant juxtaposition of, like, Starscream killing a living being and being like, oh, that was fun. Versus, like, Optimus Prime, A, like, it's inadvertent, and B, it's just, like, his reaction is the complete polar opposite. Like, even though, you know, you feel like intrinsically the unspoken thing he understands, like, oh, this isn't a human, this isn't kind of the same level of death, like, you know, in terms of, like, the moral value of it, but he's still, like, really, like, oh, no, like, this is, I'm sorry, you know, and it's that angle, I think, yeah, like, works really well as a juxtaposition. It's also, I think it's also interesting in the way that you just mentioned that, like, it's always sort of this unspoken thing for the most part that, like, yeah, Earth is fragile and kind of fascinating to the Transformers. I mean, you know, there are certain characters that are very overt about, like, I find this planet really interesting and kind of, again, the comic continuity and the cartoon both do this with certain characters where they kind of end up coming to prefer Earth and being like, nah, actually, this feels more like a home to me. I just like this place more. I find it more interesting. But that's the kind of thing. All of this stuff is exactly sort of what I was talking about up front of, like, this series taking it slow and giving time to actually explore some of these things. Because again, like you say, this is always sort of there in Transformers, but it's never really explicitly talked about. But these panels give it an opportunity to actually do that and put it out there. And then I think the final thing that's kind of just interesting is, like, you know, Spike's reaction to the whole thing of just, like, again, this could have been a whole subplot of, like, oh my god, you're as bad as them, you're just killing people, or, you know, you're just killing things, or there are a multitude of different responses to this, but, like, it turns into a really interesting sort of conversation between the two of them that kind of says a lot about the sort of the moral values of the two characters, kind of the relationship that's already built up between these humans and kind of the Autobots. And I know, Spike's kind of, you know, conversation here is just, like, really interesting of just, like, trying to learn a little bit about, you know, who Optimus Prime is, you know, he trying to explain things like family, and it's like, just show him a Fast and Furious movie, like, then I'll get it. you know, that kind of thing. And I know that there's just so much to this, and it's a very kind of, you know, there's a very, like, dialogue-heavy page or two. Well, actually, it's sort of multiple pages, because then it goes back the other way and kind of, you know, you get a good description of Cybertron and the situation there, which I guess is what we'll get onto. But yeah, I know, it's just... It's really interesting that these pages managed to do like a multitude of different things through this one pretty simple conversation and this one relatively small in the grand scheme of things event.
And before we sort of move on to the conversation you're talking about, another thing that's worth bringing up is at the end of the last issue, the first issue, excuse me, we had the Autobots, we had everyone loaded into, well, let's clarify this. Optimus Prime was driving away with Spike and Carly in his cab. And there was Ratchet as well, but Ratchet had loaded everyone into the back of Optimus Prime's trailer, and the Seeker jets were chasing them down. It looked like it was just going to be curtains for the Autobots. And then all of a sudden, the Decepticons had to hold off on going any further because they were low on energon. And it was this really tense moment of, where are they going to go next? What's going to happen? Like, is this going to continue almost immediately? And in essence, we come to find out gradually, and not to jump too far ahead now, but we've had a little bit of a time skip, and not quite much, maybe say like, hypothetically, a few hours a day, maybe. But already, the tone of the start of this issue, it's not what I was expecting, but I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, let's not forget, like, you know, Jetfire died as well. Like, you know, quite a lot of shit. Quite a lot of stuff happened in that first issue, you know, and so yeah, like, you know, you would not have complained if it had just continued to barrel on a high pace. But I think it does make sense to have this breathing room of like, hold up a second, a lot has happened here. Let's kind of, you know, it's a bit of like, you might be wondering how I got here kind of scene of just like, let's actually stop for a moment and just give you a little bit of backstory about these characters. And again, this is sort of what I'm talking about when it's like trying to make this accessible to newcomers as well, because, you know, that first issue is a really great introduction for like the bombastic action and look at these cool characters, and all of that kind of stuff, and obviously the very obvious Autobot versus Decepticon stuff. But this is a really good opportunity to sort of fill in the gaps of like why they're here and to really get into sort of the moral fiber of the two factions, if nothing else.
Yeah, and you were talking about how we had a bit more of a conversation between Spike and Optimus. So let's delve into that now. Back to the TF Wiki. Seeing the Autobot leader's despair at the fact he killed the little deer, Spike decides to change the subject of the conversation and asks Optimus about his name. Optimus tells him that the Prime title denotes him as leader of the Autobots and was passed to him by the previous leader of their kind. Optimus in turn inquires about Spike's name, who reveals that his mum used to call him Spikey before she passed away due to his hair always sticking up as a child. Optimus is confused. He's never heard the term of mum or dad before, though he does know the concept of family. Spike then asks Optimus where he came from, prompting Optimus to tell him about Cybertron and the war between the Autobots and the Decepticons that has raged for the past two centuries. The Autobots' forces eventually dwindled from the Decepticons' relentless onslaught to the point where they were forced to flee the planet aboard the Ark, so we get the official name check of the ship that was in the mountain. However, their escape was attacked by Megatron and the Decepticons. The last thing Optimus saw before they crashed into the mountain was Earth. Optimus thanks Spike for assisting him during the battle that we saw in the first issue, saying that he's not sure they would have escaped without him. And Spike, in turn, offers condolences for Bumblebee. And that Bumblebee moment is... It's almost a crushing but wonderful full circle moment, Andy, because we've had this talk about... Each, like, both of their homes, their backgrounds, their family, and the concept of family is something that Optimus understands. And the scene basically just ends with when he's reminded about Bumblebee, he just responds with the word family.
Yeah, and the illustrations and the paneling of this is really good, again, in terms of giving breathing space, because there's just a great panel where he just, like, looks down at this deer that he'd squashed that he's sort of been cradling, and it's this really good sort of, you know, you can feel what's going through his mind at that point in time in terms of just kind of, like, coming to terms with death and, like, you know, how easily and quickly it can come and this kind of thing. And then, yeah, like you say, and then he just says, family. And then Cliffjumper appears.
Yeah, right. Like, talk about a tonal shift. Like, we go from that, and then Cliffjumper just goes, hey, great leader.
Yeah, and I love it. Like, that's a really good, like, mood breaker of just like, okay, now we're moving on.
Yeah, it's, excuse me. It was, we'll get onto exactly what was said in a second, but it's just the tonal shift. Only Cliffjumper or someone of that ilk could do that. And it worked perfectly.
Yeah, it would have to be, it's basically like a Cliffjumper or a jazz thing. Like, I don't think anyone else really could do that. I mean, Bumblebee probably could, but as mentioned, not that anymore.
So, back to the TF Wiki then. Their somber heart-to-heart is soon interrupted by the newly reactivated Cliffjumper, whom Ratchet was able to successfully repair. Optimus warmly greets his old friend, but Cliffjumper is not nearly as taken with Earth as his commander. Freaking out, upon seeing Spike and Carly and bumping into a tree. Now, this is a wonderful moment, Andy, just to break for a second there, because I didn't expect Cliffjumper to be so freaked out by humans, but in when you think about it logically, the humans are just utterly freaked out by the giant robots that have invaded their world. It makes sense that the Transformers, on the Autobot side anyway, should be at least a little bit freaked out by their surroundings, everything that's going on, because, especially with everything that's gone on, it's a complete change of scenery. But what I love particularly is Spike is the one to try and offer his hand for a handshake, and Cliffjumper is just kind of the one going, we're not there yet, man, as a response. Which then prompts Carly to jump into the conversation. And She is the one who reads a polite riot act to Cliffjumper. To quote directly from the comic here. New for you? I'm sorry, last time I checked, I'm the one who has to deal with the fact that there are apparently giant robots from space that now live on Earth. Do I look like I could squish you? Get a reality check. And Cliffjumper just responds with, okay. Just a wonderful moment.
Yeah, and I mean Cliffjumper is gonna have some times over the next like issue or two, but yeah, like this is really good, and I mean yeah, like Cliffjumper kind of perfectly fits this because again, like you think of sort of you know, cartoon Cliffjumper. He never really got a lot of play in the comics that I recall, but like you know, in the cartoon, he is kind of quite vocal and extroverted and kind of out there, and so like it's just a really good foil to Optimus Prime, who's just like very calm and collected and kind of you know thinks everything through, whereas he's just like, oh my god, just like a mole, like a, I mean I do enjoy like the Turbo Rat reference, because that's like I feel like that's been used across multiple realms of Transformers fiction, and he's just like, oh, you're just like a mole thing, like this is weird, which yeah, like you say, very very fair, like from the other side of the fence of just like, oh, these creatures are weird, but yeah, it's just a really nice kind of little bit of interaction, and it's just such a good kind of way of changing the tone from what's been a pretty kind of downbeat first few pages. Like, it just needs a character like that to pep things up and get things moving on.
So as we continue with the synopsis, this gets Cliffjumper to calm down, and the two, Carly and Cliffjumper, shake hands. We then go inside the quarry, and Ratchet has set about trying to revive other Autobots. But it turns out he has used up the last of their Energon reserves fixing Cliffjumper. Optimus considers using the Matrix of Leadership to replenish their Energon, but Ratchet says that they can't, because the Matrix is connected to Prime's own life force, and if they lose him, they lose everything. I feel like that is going to be a very big note down the line, Andy. That seems, it's not a throwaway line, but that's going to come into play at some point line.
Yeah, it is quite a big thing to throw out there, because there is the other angle to it. It's like, well, that's a convenient way of just saying like, well, yeah, we can't just reboot everybody. I'm guessing also that like the unspoken thing here is that they've like reactivated Cliffjumper because he's small. Because like on Optimus's trailer, like next up is Wheeljack, and it's like logically speaking, he's probably the next person you want active because like he's good science invention man, and he might figure out a way to do the rest. But I guess the narrative is that they just don't have enough energon to reactivate him. So it's just like, well, Cliffjumper's only little. He's very fuel efficient.
But part of me did wonder, and this sounds horrible to phrase this, but part of me did wonder if it's a way to try and replace Bumblebee.
I mean, we need one of these guys. But I mean, wasn't that the, like a note that we read from the last issue where the guy was like, I hate drawing Bumblebee, and or maybe it's just like, I hate drawing Bumblebee, but it's just like, but Cliffjumper's basically the same, and he's still here.
I do think Daniel Warren Johnson made a note about that. But that said, though, in terms of personalities, as we've seen in the G1 cartoon that we've recapped, as mentioned, and even just from this initial interaction, Bumblebee is an outgoing character, but isn't necessarily, I'll just call it, brash and a bit stupid. Whereas Cliffjumper, we know from the past, and we will see as things unfold a bit, he doesn't mind perhaps disobeying an order, or perhaps going out just to do his thing to make sure in his brain something is all right. Yeah. So he kind of puts a priority more on what he thinks.
Yeah. I mean, I think the more interesting thing from a story point of view is, like, Bumblebee has always been the kind of, like, human Autobot sort of, like, he's always the one who bridges that gap, like, in both, like, comic fiction and cartoons and, you know, the Bumblebee movie, the live-action film. Like, he is, like, the conduit between Earth and Cybertron, in a sense, because he just kind of inherently just has just the right personality that just gets on with humans. They don't find him too intimidating because of his size, etc. And he's always just that guy. So it's kind of interesting that they've just like removed him from the canon immediately, because he is usually that guy. That's kind of interesting as well. But I know, I mean, also I will say, in Cliffjumper's favor, he has a glass gun, and even like decades after the original Transformers, I still find that unfathomably cool. He can just turn stuff into glass with a gun, and you know, I'm very disappointed that we're in like 2023 and nobody has invented this, although it's probably for the best.
Yeah, right, exactly. Imagine what the heck could happen in the world if that happens. So Cliffjumper, following the discussion about the Matrix and whatnot, remarks that if they, the Autobots, are running out of energon, the Decepticons hopefully have the same problem. We then go to the power plant that Sparkplug and Davey were working at, and a police officer is surveying the damage caused by Starscream and taking statements, not believing the plant manager's story about there being a giant robot. The officer says that they'll get some detectives out here to investigate, but a panic spark plug insists that they need to call in the army.
Yeah. I mean, I did really laugh at that as like a police response. Like, yeah, I guess we'll get some to look at this. Like, this entire place is completely trashed, and there are just squished bodies around. It's like, oh yeah, you know, you're calling Columbo, why don't you?
I like the dialogue as well, just to quote it from the police officer who's like responding to all this. Like, a guy says, no, a flying robot that looked like a plane. And the police officer just responds with, a robot? Causing all this? You've been skipping safety drills again, Geordie? It's just, like, a robot. It's like that use of the word robot, it just perfectly accentuates the kind of level of seriousness this police officer is taking it.
Yeah. It's also like a really good kind of use of this sort of like small town where all of this stuff has kicked off. Because yeah, like he just calls Sparkplug like Sparky. It's like, you know, this is where like everybody hangs out in one bar. Everyone knows each other. And it's, I always enjoy that kind of like small town kind of thing where like, you know, the cop will pull over a guy or like, you know, arrest him in the afternoon, and by the evening they're drinking together because they just all go to the same pub. And like I always enjoy that vibe.
So the officer is trying to reassure Sparkplug things are going to be fine. And at this point, Skywarp just drops down from the sky and destroys the police car in what is a fantastic panel in the comic. Just such an evil, maniacal look on Skywarp's face. And he just shouts, "Watch out, weaklings," after he's done that.
Yeah, I love it.
Then behind him, we see Starscream and Soundwave arriving, carrying an energy transfer module stolen from the Ark spaceship, which will allow them to more efficiently convert energon from the plant. The police officer, during this, tries to shoot at Starscream, which is a wonderful thing to see in the comic panel, which is just a little, like, ding, ding, ding sound effects coming off of them. And much to Sparkplug's protest, the police officer doing that, Starscream just steps on the officer.
Yeah, again, there will be... This is not the last squishing that will happen in this comic.
And it's not like a slow, painful squish either. It's just literally a thump.
Yeah, the worst part about that is I thought the first time I read this, like when I read it on a relatively small tablet, was that it was just sort of implied with like, oh, maybe he just like stomped next to him to really scare him. But then when I looked back at that panel, I was like, oh no, you can see his arm. Like,
yeah, oh yeah.
He's been stomped on. Like, what was I thinking? Also, I have to call out Skywarp for just shouting chug, chug, chug when they start using the energy trap. He's been on Earth like 5 minutes. How has he already learnt like college frat boy behaviour?
I mean, what I would say is he's probably just really freaking thirsty for energon.
I mean, yes, clearly there is that as well, but...
Or maybe he heard a human say it. I don't know.
Could be.
I'm trying to make up excuses now, who knows?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to like the spin-off where it's just like Skywarp and Sparkplug sitting down the pub, just like having a drinking game or something.
Skywarp, the college years.
Yeah. Again, we are available for writing duties if anybody needs to expand the Energon universe. We've got loads of ideas right here.
As the Decepticons begin to drain the plant of its energy, Soundwave intercepts a transmission from the US military, asking a nearby pilot, under the call sign Frosting, to intercept their attack. Amused at the idea of the squishies, Starscream goes to intercept the fighter. We get a really cool dogfight sequence at this point. I'm sort of deviating from the synopsis here, Andy, because this is actually a potentially significant thing that happens. But we get a really cool dogfight sequence during this. The jet has to deal with the fact that they're fighting a plane, then a giant robot, which then ultimately Starscream just pretty much swats the plane out of the sky. And this forces the ejector seat to then be initiated, if you will. Both of the pilots eject, and there's a wonderful panel where one of the pilots just ends up in Starscream's face. And Starscream just says, and you can imagine the voice, he just says, "Hi." And then just outright just squishes him with a clap. I laughed so hard at this panel.
Yeah, it's very good. Again, very in keeping for what we've seen of Starscream thus far. I also really like the panel. It's very cool where you have, like you say, this really good dogfight, but then you just have this kind of like pilot's eye view where like they're chasing down Starscream. It looks like they've got a lock on him, and then he just changes into robot mode, and it's just this really cool like first person shot as Starscream's like half robot, half human, and they're just like, what? And then yeah, it all goes pear-shaped, and there's one of the most interesting things I find in the artwork of this comic thus far is that it's not afraid to have these like mid-transformation shots where they're like half vehicle, half robot mode, because that's really hard to do and not look janky. Like, we've kind of, you know, I mean, the cartoon only ever really used to do it for sort of comedy purposes, effectively, like, I'm stuck, this is not great, but like it manages to pull it off here without looking weird or janky. Like, even a couple of pages before that, like where you see Starscream like transforming into his jet mode to fly off, like that's really well done. There's a lot of detail and kind of moving parts to it that makes it feel quite kinetic but doesn't make it look janky, or make it look like the toys. Like, sometimes, you know, the comics, it just looked like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, when you're a kid and you were called to dinner halfway through the transformation, and you know, but it's, yeah, that I find really impressive through this thus far.
Yeah, I can't remember if it's in this issue or issue 3. We'll find out as we go along. But there is a definitive moment where they show Optimus doing the same thing. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's very cool.
But what of the other pilot I mentioned, as we go back to the TF Wiki? The other soldier activates a button on his parachute, converting it into a winged jetpack. As Starscream advances, the pilot pulls out a flare gun and fires it at the Decepticon, getting a lucky shot at his eye before retreating. Starscream, at this point, opts to give up on the minor annoyance, as we see the pilot fly away, and we get to see his call sign. Duke, or Duke, if you know your G.I. Joe lore. Are you aware who Duke is, Andy?
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's not Duke Nukem, I know that.
There you go, yeah. a fairly significant character in the world of G.I. Joe. So I believe this was the first acknowledgement in the Energon universe of the G.I. Joe side of things in the comics. So it's really nice to see that that comes into play. And the wonderful part about this for me, Andy, is I had no idea this was going to be Duke. And so when they suddenly showed the call sign in the panel, I just suddenly basically went, oh my God, that was so good the way they introduced that. And it makes sense that he was the daredevil able to get away from it.
Yeah, yeah, because I hadn't really been thinking about the G.I. Joe side of this until that point. And yeah, like, you know, I have no, like, real history with that series. But even I was just like, oh, what? Cool. That's really awesome. So yeah, it's really nicely done, and it kind of keeps its powder dry until that moment in a really satisfying way.
Excuse me. I would almost compare that reveal to, in similar ilk, although I appreciate it's not as grandiose a scale, it's almost similar to the Jetfire reveal in the first issue of Void Rivals, in that you didn't see it coming.
Yeah, yeah. This series, I mean, again, we'll probably talk separately at some point about Void Rivals from the Energon universe as well. Like, that's pretty good at throwing in moments like that as well. Like, there are one or two reveals where you're not necessarily expecting a particular character to suddenly show up, and it's just like, oh, okay, that's how this ties into this. That's cool.
So Duke flies away to fight another day, as it were. Back at the plant, Sparkplug takes one of the patrol cars, which I'm sure that's a felony, but you know what, given the circumstance, Andy, we'll let him off.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to arrest him now? Like, we saw what happened to the local Bobby.
And he is chased down by Skywarp. Before he can catch the human, however, Frosting's F-18 comes crashing down on top of him and Soundwave, allowing Sparkplug to slip away. Do you know what? I'm going to be honest, Andy, I had not put two and two together on that was the jet that they had ejected out of until now.
Yeah,
I had not put two and two together on that. That shows my reading ability, I guess.
Yeah. Also, I mean, again, two things I love about kind of this page and this panel. One, I'm guessing what Sparkplug is doing here is like foreshadowing of Prowl making his debut, because that police car sure looks similar. Also, just like Skywarp's response to this jet about to fall on him is just like, oh. Which is very good.
Oh, yeah, I don't know how I hadn't put two and two together on that. That I like that. That's good. The resulting explosion, though, is seen by the Autobots, and Carly and Spike realize it is the plant that is under attack. Feeling responsible for bringing their war to this planet, Optimus opts to face the Decepticons despite Ratchet's protest about their need to find their own energy sources. Optimus assigns Cliffjumper to stay with Ratchet and protect their sleeping comrades. Spike decides to come along to help his dad, which Optimus reluctantly allows. Carly tries to stop him, saying they need to get back home to their parents, but Spike insists. She decides to leave for home alone. And it should be noted that the way that comes about is Spike's driven off with Optimus, and Cliffjumper kind of goes, so, what are you going to do? And she goes, I'm just going to go home. And there's kind of that awkward thing of, oh, is she going to get in trouble? Like, what's going to happen? And this despite, obviously, like I said, Cliffjumper having been assigned to a particular task. As she drives back towards town, she is spotted by Laserbeak. And the visual of this, Andy, is so good. We've got like an overhead shot of Carly driving away and just this wonderful shot of Laserbeak just swooping down from a good distance. It is such a good, just such good art. I love this.
Yeah, and again, I mean, we have a couple of bits of sort of like classic Transformer stuff here. I mean, one, like the binoculars Cliffjumper uses when they hear the explosion, like, is the same binoculars that they use in Transformers the movie, which is cool. And then, yeah, like, you know, again, scratch it off on your bingo card if you had, like, Laserbeak was watching the whole thing. Because finally, it's not a proper Transformers G1 continuity unless Laserbeak was watching everything. And finally, here we are.
Now, one little fun continuity thing, which I wonder how much this is going to play into things long term. But in the first issue, we talked about how the side of Carly's van had, like, references to various things in pop culture. Mm-hmm. And during all of this time, Carly had added a new thing to her van. That being a sort of an image of Optimus Prime. And it's because of that image that Laserbeak identifies that Carly is clearly in cahoots in some way with the Autobots as well. It's so well done. I love that, Andy.
Yeah, it is a kind of an interesting little thing. And again, that's the sort of attention to detail, like, it's not really required. Like, you just have, like, oh yeah, Laserbeak was there, like, you know, he's gonna follow them. But yeah, the fact that they bothered to do that, it's like, yeah, okay, that's pretty cool.
Carly arrives home to find Sparkplug already there, dressed in his old army fatigues and carrying several guns. Carly asks where her dad is, and Sparkplug answers that they killed him. Davey is dead. Literally, the final panel of the comic is a picture frame of Davey and Carly together, and the dialogue is just, they killed your dad. So now we know, Andy, that Davey was Carly's dad, which you could argue you could have potentially figured out, but again, in terms of revealing something, the way this was done, it just feels so good, because there was no inkling that Davey was Carly's dad originally. Just, you know, Sparkplug's got a friend from work who's going to give him a lift and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
We've all been there. There was no inkling of it, and I loved this reveal, as heartbreaking as it is.
Yeah, because I had that moment, like, wait, why is Sparkplug here? And, like, when she goes in the house, and yeah, like, just before they get to that panel, like, oh no, I think I know what the answer to this is. But yeah, like, it's a good... It is a good, like, little cliffhanger ending. And yeah, like, things continue to be happy in the world of this new Transformers continuity.
But as a second issue, though, Andy, freaking fantastic. Really, really liked this.
Yeah, it's very good, you know, for all of the reasons that we've outlined. And yeah, it feels like every time, you know, they add something new into the mix, it's like, it feels right, and it all feels like it sort of fits in. Because sometimes you can have this kind of thing where it all feels very pandery to an existing audience, or it tries really hard to be something completely different. Whereas this kind of goes back to what I was saying up top, that it feels like it's kind of walking that tightrope of being sort of faithful to the original ideas and material and characters, but also being something fresh and new enough that it's not just... Because, yeah, you could just, especially for these early bits, you could just tell exactly the same story again and done with it. And there must have been a temptation to, because, you know, I mean, I guess this is maybe, like, the difference of, you know, of focus. Because obviously the original Transformers comic and the cartoon, it was imperative that they got all the characters up and running as soon as possible to sell the toys of them. Whereas obviously this doesn't have the same impetus. So it has a bit of breathing room to, you know, slowly bring characters into the mix. But there must still have been a temptation to, like, oh, let's bring back all the favourites, because, you know, that's what everybody wants to see. But, you know, we're at this point and we've only had, like, a handful of characters. And I think it's kind of the better for it, honestly.
Agreed. So from there, we've discussed the comic, as it were, but now we need to sort of get some additional info, some trivia notes, because as we found out with the first issue, there is potentially a lot to delve into from a background point of view, or perhaps there are some things that we have not specifically touched on which are worth bringing up as well. So to the TF Wiki we go. Continuity notes. Having been merely hinted at in the first issue, the flashback to the War on Cybertron gives us our first look at Megatron, though his whereabouts are still unknown. Hashtag, where is Megatron? Yeah, the actual panels that they mentioned, it was Megatron, like, beating up Optimus, and also kind of a, like, his body, but his face was, like, in like, a shadowy veil. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. His head looked really wide in that first shot that they show of him in that Cybertron back thing as well. It's like, oh man, he's just been working out.
He's got a fat neck.
Yeah.
While mentioned but not seen last issue, This issue gives us our first appearance of Laserbeak, still out scouting for new sources of energy. This issue confirms what Jetfire alluded to last issue, that unlike most incarnations of the G1 story, the war has only been raging for 2 centuries instead of the more traditional 4 million years.
Yeah, and I'm interested as to whether that is going to play into anything or whether that's just a choice to kind of make it feel a bit more fresh, because you know I feel like it's almost a bit of a hackneyed old thing with this sort of thing, like, oh yeah, it's been a war for millions of years because it just sounds cool, whereas actually there's something a bit more interesting when it's a bit more recent and immediate, and it gives a bit more opportunity, because I think again this is probably playing more into sort of some of the more recent continuities where it's kind of like Optimus Prime and Megatron are there right at the very start of the conflict, because that makes it a lot more interesting as they're like kind of the leaders as everything kind of devolves into war. So I think they're maybe going for that kind of angle. But it is an interesting, you know, diversion from the classic continuity.
Mm. Ratchet refers to deactivated brothers and sisters. While RC has previously been seen on the cover of the last issue, which confirms female Transformers exist in this continuity, the issue implies she's not the only female Autobot aboard the Ark. Though exactly who these other female Autobots are is currently unknown.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to hope for, like, Alita 1 too much, but...
I know, even, like, going back to, again, what... And if you're a new listener, we should put this into perspective. I've only seen sort of all of American G1 and now the Headmasters that we've been recapping on the show. That's all I have seen, really, from animation and stuff, sans the War for Cybertron things on Netflix and whatnot. I've never really delved into too much more, not because I didn't want to, just a time kind of thing. So from my perspective, Andy, I vividly remember one of the G1 episodes which was very focused on a bunch of female Transformers.
Yeah.
And it was such a cool episode. I wonder if any of them may come into play.
Yeah, because that was like Alita 1 and I forget the name of the other two. So yeah, I suspect that's probably, well, I don't know. Like maybe it is where they're going. Like I wouldn't put it past them. Again, when we talk about Void Rivals, we will get some really relatively deep cuts in Transformers lore whenever we record that episode. But yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if there's some quite deep cuts in terms of like roster at some point in this whole new universe.
And chances are they may bring back some characters that were established later from IDW, because I'm sure there were probably a few that came into the fray.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Let's go to Transformers references on the TF Wiki. First of all, Cliffjumper compares Spike to a turnboat. What the heck's a turnboat? Cliffjumper compares Spike to a turbo rat, as you mentioned, Andy, a form of Cybertronian wildlife that first appeared in the 4th issue of Tim Scioli and John Barber's Transformers vs. G.I. Joe.
Oh, okay. See, I felt like it was older even than that, but there we go.
Well, there we go. The police cars of the FPD are quite clearly based on Prowl, retaining his Japanese police car colour layout and twin red siren lights, as opposed to red and blue, and the highway patrol markings on the back. None of which really makes sense on an American City patrol car, but we'll let that slide.
Yeah. I mean, that's the part that made it so funny. Of like, oh, it's Prowl, because, yeah, like, those are not American police cars at all. But, yeah, here they are. I don't know. Like, maybe like, the local Bobby in this town was just a big weeb, and he just wanted his, like... He wanted to rice up his police car and go a bit Initial D on it, and that's my headcanon for why he has that police car.
Furthering the reference, in Daniel Warren Johnson, the author, in his director's commentary for this issue, prior to Mike Spicer colouring the pages, it is seen that DWJ for short had given a all caps Prowl license plate to the police car Sparkplug steals to escape Skywarp and Soundwave. The car's license plate is blank in the final release.
I mean, that is a little too on the nose, I guess.
G.I. Joe references. First Sergeant Conrad S. Hauser, codename Duke, makes his debut in the Energon universe in this issue ahead of his own title debuting next month, which would actually be this month at the time we are recording this. I believe it's at the end of December it's coming out. Mm-hmm. While G.I. Joe doesn't exist yet in this continuity, it seems the US military has been developing some high-tech tools, such as the jetpack that Duke uses. This could be a new take on the Jet Mobile Propulsion Unit, which the acronym for that, Andy, is JUMP, all caps. the JUMP jetpack from the G.I. Joe toy line, which Duke famously uses in the opening sequence of the G.I. Joe movie.
Yeah, which is the one bit of G.I. Joe that I am very intimately familiar with because I watch it all the time because it's rad.
It's so good, that opening.
It's possibly one of the best pieces of Japanese animation you will find outside of like Studio Ghibli. It is crazy. But yeah, and it's also worth noting, like, this issue then actually finishes with like a teaser preview of the Duke comic as well. Mm. So it's all, it's as if they planned it.
There you go. You see, it's synergy, Andy. It's a horrid word at times, but synergy. Real world references. Frosting's name is painted on the side of his jet's cockpit, a real practice common on United States fighter aircraft. It's worth noting, however, that the formatting is slightly off. His rank and full name should be on one line, with his call sign printed below. Instead, it simply lists his rank, first name, and call sign on the same line. The things you learn, right?
Yeah.
Storytelling notes. So I'll say now, folks, we may not delve into all of these, as it were, so I encourage you to go to the TF Wiki to be able to read all of them, but we will touch on some of the storytelling notes here, no doubt from DWJ's director's commentary. Apparently, at one point, DWJ considered modelling Spike on photos of himself as a kid, but he quickly decided it felt weird. For Spike's final design, DWJ wanted to give him big ears and make him appear, quote-unquote, racially ambiguous. His Marty McFly jacket wasn't particularly a reference, just an aesthetic preference of DWJ's.
Yeah, it's the 80s. Like, that jacket makes sense.
The issue's opening scene where Optimus Prime accidentally steps on a deer was one that Hasbro got cold feet about. DWJ's editor suggested changing the animal for a squirrel, but DWJ was able to fight for the scene as he envisioned it. Following on from last issue, the scene draws further inspiration from The Iron Giant, in which the Iron Giant sees a deer get killed.
Mm-hmm. You know who has had cold feet? Optimus Prime.
Fair play. It's interesting, actually, because I think we mentioned this on... when we discussed the first issue, I vaguely recall that there was a mention of Hasbro getting cold feet about something in that issue. I can't remember what exactly, but I think we did muse what else may Hasbro get cold feet about in the future. So it's interesting to see they're totally fine with, well, we assume totally fine, we may be proven wrong in a minute, of humans just getting slapped, crushed by Starscream. But as soon as it's like an animal like that in an accidental way, that's what they got cold feet about. That's very interesting.
Yeah, well, I think it's basically because it's an Autobot and because it's Optimus Prime. I mean, because it is particularly interesting because, again, I mean, one of the many times Optimus Prime dies in the G1 continuity is because, like, he refuses to kill, like, a virtual being in a video game, and so he just gets killed instead. And so, you know, it is very much his signature of, like, he never kills anything, well, maybe Decepticons, but yeah, anything else. So it is actually a bit of a sort of break with the tradition. And again, the more broader, you know, you look at sort of superhero movies and stuff, like, they very much shy away from having the heroes do anything bad, even if it's by accident for the most part. So I can kind of understand the reticence, but I'm glad they kind of fought the corner of letting them do that, because I do think it has an impact and a power to it.
Mm. For the planet Cybertron, DWJ looked at Transformers the movie for reference. Which, that was very clear just from the way it was designed in that panel with Optimus and Spike in the foreground and Cybertron in the background.
Yeah. He didn't go for Headmasters because it was blown up, so he couldn't do it.
Beachcomber, seen getting shot in a flashback, is one of DWJ's favourite Autobots.
Yeah, you know what? Beachcomber's pretty cool. Beachcomber is underrated. I'm glad. I did do a double take at that one because I I did think, like, maybe I'm just looking at that wrong, because, you know, it's quite small in the panel, like, because that's sort of a random Transformer to have. So that makes sense. Like, yeah, when I have Cosmos. But yeah, that makes sense why it's Beast Chamber then. Right.
Prime's trailer being established as the Autobots' makeshift base, excuse me, stemmed from a feeling that previous Transformers media had underutilized the trailer or downplayed its significance relative to Prime himself.
Yeah.
It's not actually something that we delve too much into in hindsight, but that moment when you mentioned earlier that Wheeljack was kind of the next one in line, it's all just based on Prime's trailer. Like, that is the bed, if you will, for how they're doing, I'll call it the resurrection, for want of a better word.
Yeah, yeah. And it's and again, this is maybe very much like sharing DNA with childhood me, who was always confused, because one of the big selling points of the Optimus Prime tour is like, look at this cool trailer that it folds out into, like, a, you know, into whatever you want to imagine it to be, basically. You know, it's a medical bay, it's a weapons trailer thing. You know, I mean, some of the early G1 comics, you know, had like Roller as like an extension of you know, Prime's kind of sentience, you know, that he could kind of transfer a bit of his memory into it to drive it around and all of that stuff. And then, yeah, like, it never, in the cartoon especially, like, his trailer just disappears because it's an inconvenience whenever he transforms. And so, yeah, it's kind of nice to see it actually being used for something, because it's like, yeah, this is how I played with Optimus Prime in my bedroom when I was like 5, so finally someone's using it right.
Carly is seen adding Optimus Prime to her van's mural, following on from the previous issue, where she remarked that the painting was missing something. According to DWJ, this was primarily a mercenary bit of plotting to give Laserbeak a reason to follow her at the end of the issue. From Laserbeak's POV, we could see him zooming in on the drawing of Prime with his heads-up display reading with 2 exclamation marks. Nice to see we get those little things. the police car, this issue is drawn as Prowl as a way of deliberately playing with the reader's expectations.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
The energy converter is another plot device, as DWJ needed a quick and dirty way of solving the Decepticons' fuel problem. After the fact, he realized they resembled the screen canisters... After the fact, he realized they resembled the screen canisters from the film Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, actually, I did think that they felt familiar to me in some way. So, yeah, I guess that's maybe what it was. It's a cool design. It looked good, so it's fine.
The Seeker who stomps on the cop was originally intended as Skywarp, not Starscream. After spotting the colouring error, DWJ decided it didn't actually matter, so it remains that way in the final issue. In the previous panel, Starscream is standing on the other side of the Energon converter from the cop.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's interesting, because, you know, that sort of plays into something that I think happens in the next issue a little bit in terms of dialogue, so I always figured that was deliberate and not just a mistake. Interesting.
So we've got a couple more notes here before we sort of move on from there, but here we go. First of all, unsurprisingly, the confrontation between Duke and Starscream, which serves to set up Duke's own miniseries, was mandated by Skybound, but DWJ had a lot of freedom over the specifics. Firstly, DWJ came up with Frosting's call sign after seeing his wife's leftover cupcake frosting in the freezer. Secondly, the F-18, specifically drawn as the older model, as seen in Independence Day, instead of the revised F-18D. Sorry, I should have said the F-18 is specifically drawn as the older model, as seen in Independence Day, instead of the revised F-18D. Apologies. And thirdly, DWJ improvised the design for Duke's high-tech jetpack, and at Robert Kirkman's prompting, who is kind of the overseer of the Energon universe, as we described it in the last podcast, came up with the story beat where he shoots Starscream with a flare gun, which I think was still a fantastic moment, Andy, and it's the first indication that there could be a weakness in those Decepticons as well.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to give them a bit of a, like, feeling that they're not completely indestructible.
And the final note here. Optimus Prime is drawn mid-transformation in remarkable detail. DWJ was never satisfied by on-panel depictions of transformation in the Marvel or IDW comics.
And again, very much felt like, I mean, given his stories about like his own Optimus Prime toy, you could feel like the reference there of just like, yeah, that's a lot like what Transforming the Optimus Prime toy was like, with the head still flipped up while it's in like cab mode.
So there we go, folks. I encourage you to go to the TF Wiki's page for this issue, because there are some other details there, including some errors and such, which may be of interest to you. But Andy, overall, like I said a few minutes ago, really, really loved this issue, and I can't wait to discuss issue 3 with you.
Yeah, likewise. It's been, it's very cool. And yeah, like, you know, it's frustrating in one way, like, especially coming from like my childhood of like a weekly comic of just like, oh man, I've got to wait for the next one now. But that in itself kind of tells you that this has been pretty good so far, that we have to wait between issues. Like, how dare they?
Indeed. And in terms of talking about waiting, folks, next time on the podcast, we will be discussing Transformers issue 3. Now, to sort of give a little bit of clarity here, folks, like we sort of alluded to earlier, we've already read issue 3 and we're sort of recording this one. We're going to be recording the next podcast. And then the podcast after that, Andy and I were thinking, is it may not be as long as perhaps this discussion has been and perhaps the issue 3 discussion will be, but we are going to do one discussing issues 2 to 6 of Void Rivals as well, because there are some Transformers deep cuts, like Andy mentioned, in there. And also, to be quite frank, it's actually been a fun read, so we kind of want to delve into it a little bit, as it were. And we don't know if that's something we will do regularly, kind of covering the other Energon Universe comics. It's more just it feels right to kind of do that, Andy, given how much focus it's served to setting up this entire thing.
Yeah, and there are some very major pointers into the Transformers side of the universe in Void Rivals as well, so I suspect there's going to be some pretty huge crossovers at some point between those two in particular.
Indeed, and as we get further along, as we get into the new year, I should say, everybody, we're hoping to get a more regular schedule back in the fray, and no doubt the Energon Universe comics will be part of that regular schedule of whatever is next, because we are still figuring out what should be properly next on the docket as far as the podcast goes. But if you have enjoyed the podcast, everybody, or you want to tell a friend, make sure you go to starscreamspod.com. There you can find the links to all the podcast platforms in audio form, and of course on YouTube, of which, if you have been watching the video version on YouTube and you're wondering why is my background very blank on this particular episode and the next couple most likely, it's because I'm doing some decorating, so I made sure everything was safe in a box. That's the simple version of that. If you're listening to the audio version, disregard what I just said, makes no difference to you. If you want to find us on social media, you can find our accounts on Twitter, or X, and Instagram under the name StarScreamsPod. And of course, if you want to subscribe on the YouTube channel, if you search for the name StarScreams Ghost Podcast, we should come up just fine in your search result. Andy, before we wrap up this edition of the podcast, anything else you would like to impart on our wonderful listeners?
No, I am just looking forward to talking about the next one, as we mentioned. So, be sure to stick with us as we stick with this rather good comic.
There we go, folks. Stay tuned, because the next podcast, I say this at the time of publishing, the issue 3 review will hopefully be out within like a week or two after. Probably assume the usual fortnight when we're on a regular rotation, because life, that's the easy way to sum it up. We're going to try and keep it to fortnightly, but if the issue 3 one were to come out earlier, don't be surprised is what I'll say. With that being said, from myself, Jeremy Graves, from him, Mr. Andy Hanley, thank you very much for listening, and until next time, squish!
Bye, everyone.